Welcome to Service Desk. I'm Kim.
And I'm not Andrew.
You're not. Who are you?
I'm David. I am a Canadian nerd.
It's been a while I don't think we've had any international nerds on yet.
Wahaha.
Yay, international nerds.
Yeah, I'm from the middle of nowhere, so yay me.
So, David, what do you do, and why did I bring you on the show today?
I don't know why you brought me on, but I do networking. I am a 28-year-old. Oh my god, I'm 28-year-old.
You're so old.
I'm so old. Cisco certified network professional. I specialize in routing and switching through Cisco. I also have my Dell certifications for networking, as well as CompTIA, A+ networking, and a few others just for funsies.
All of the certifications that prove just how big of a nerd you are. So
exactly.
You're not only like a nerd in like presentment, you are literally like, I can show you all the ways I am a nerd.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. My whole life.
I love it. So did you have anything happen at work today that was of interest?
Today?
Or this week?
This week? Yes. Okay. I was going to say today, not really. Today was kind of terrible, but not that bad.
Oh, yeah.
My company works as a smaller subsidiary of a much larger company, a Fortune 500 company. So very big company.
Oh, okay.
And our Fortune 500 company, let's just call them, I don't know, company, decided that they wanted to change their back-end authentication services and their IP addressing for that.
Just
and
all of
they
it?
They did not tell us. Oh, yes. They changed all of it.
You don't need to tell your tech people that help you out. That's fine. Just do it.
Yes. Oh, the best part, it wasn't so bad. Like, if they changed it internally, you know, change a couple IP addresses around would be fine.
Sure.
But they decided to outsource it. So now it's on the Google, now it's on MSN Cloud. And...
Oh. I mean, IP addresses aren't that important, right? Not a security hole at all.
No, not at all.
You make my security angst go through the roof.
Oh my god, don't tell me about it. It's awful.
Oh, that's no fun at all.
No, it's nightmarish.
I regularly work with clients that have third-party IT people that help them out. And the IT people themselves, for the most part, know what they're doing, but they don't know our software. And so it gets really confusing because I have to talk to the third-party person because they have, you know, the rights to uninstall, reinstall, all that kind of stuff. But like the people at the bank who actually know what I'm talking about as far as the whatever piece of software, like go do this action, the third party people don't understand like even really what the software does. And so to be able to talk through the third party person to the person at the bank is just, So I can only imagine how bad it is to be like the networking back end to have a different third party somebody to go through for IP addresses and be like, no, security breach.
I wish it was just like one person we had to go through. We have like teams we have to go through because we have SLA and stuff like that. Like we have service level agreements with like third parties to do our small stuff. And then, oh my God.
That sounds like fun.
It can be.
Oh, you poor man. That sounds not fun at all.
Not at all.
Yeah, if you can't tell, totally sarcastic. Not.
Oh, are you sure? I thought it was because you were talking about how fun it was going through third-party companies.
I mean, in theory, they are very helpful, but at the same time, there's just so many details that it's hard to keep track of for one company, much less like be able to keep track of all of the companies the third parties keep track of. Ugh.
Yes. Exactly. Mm. Especially companies with like, you know, millions and millions of customer employees each.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of millions and millions of employees, I understand you had something about Bitcoin to talk to me about.
Well, like not really a company, but I guess it's very, very big. So obviously Bitcoin has, if anyone is actually following Bitcoin right now, I hope you don't hold any because it just fell through the ground this week. It dropped it's been dropped like 10,000 earlier the year, and we're, you know, everyone was kind of okay with it. But it actually hit as low as 3,800, I think, US recently.
Wow. And
it's not so bad. I appreciate Bitcoin, definitely. I know a few people who are very, very big into Bitcoin, including like taking out housing loans and stuff for it.
Oh.
And not so good.
No,
so,
don't do that.
And yeah, don't do that. Please don't do that. Nobody ever should do that.
No, don't literally bet your house on something where you're not sure how it's going to go.
Yeah. So I have a few friends that are writing me very, very scared emails.
Well, anyway.
Good luck to them.
Yeah. However, one of the nice things about it is that from the tech perspective, this means that the prices of video cards and RAM, especially, that had been inflated because everybody was trying to get in on that good Bitcoin money, all of a sudden it's not as lucrative to do the Bitcoin mining. And so consequently, they're not buying up all of the stock, and it's not nearly as expensive as it was even just a year ago to buy some of these
even like a month ago
components. Yeah. So consequently, however, if you're buying like pre-built, I was looking at the Dell stuff, and like some of their computers are still quite spendy for where it is currently, but it's because they had to build them while it was, you know, still ridiculous. So,
well, it wasn't so much building them. They bought all their parts at like crazy inflated pricing. So now it's all low and they're like, oh no, what are we going to do?
Yeah. So consequently, side tip, if you are at all okay with opening up your own computer to add something, don't buy the RAM. Don't buy the good video card right now built into something. Like, buy whatever they give you for like the lower end, and then go out and buy your own RAM and video card and put them in yourself, because right now it's cheaper to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if you don't mind third or pre-used, eBay has really good sales on reused video cards that people are trying to like pawn off for nothing now, just to try and make some of their money back.
Yeah, understandable. I mean, it got real crazy there for a while.
I bought my 1080 at $600. Now they're selling them on like eBay for like $3. So
ouch.
I'm okay with that. I got mine ages ago, but oof, some people are not happy right now.
Understandable. I mean, it's not a good time.
No, it'd be like if like it started raining oil or something. Oil companies would be sad
for sure. But we have some word from the FCC that they are planning to try to raise the rural broadband standard. So currently, if you live in the rural of the United States, or apparently Canada probably doesn't have it good either, huh?
Yeah, we'll get to that. Or we can get to that now. That's a whole other story.
The FCC is trying to give rural people, the standard currently is 10, what does Mbps stand for?
Megabits per second.
Megabits. There we go. I almost said millibits. I knew that was wrong. 10 megabits per second, which is fast enough for like sending email. Maybe you can stream like a thing of Netflix poorly.
10 megabits per second. That's pretty much 1.8 or 2 megs per second up. You're looking at maybe one 1080p stream. So let's say you're going to watch Netflix on HD. You'll probably get it, but if you try doing 4K, you'll probably get a lot of buffering.
Sure. Basically, what that means is in a single house, you're not going to be able to have a lot of equipment going at the same time on the internet, which, as we all know, like, every house now seems to have, like, at least, you know, 3 computers, a TV, a few smart TVs, maybe a console or two, and just out in the rural areas, it just doesn't work. And so they're trying to bring that up to 25 megabits per second, which is significantly faster. Obviously, we're talking almost 3 times faster. Yeah, it'll be amazing if they can actually hit that standard, but it's really difficult because of the infrastructure that it requires to be able to build it out that far. So that's frustrating, but we'll see. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it goes well for you guys. Man, that would be a huge upgrade.
I hear that Canada, though, is not maybe quite as good.
No, we, they're, We had a new deal or talk came out there earlier the year where they were basically saying they were going to start investing money into very remote areas in Canada. And Canada is a very, very large place, which means there's lots and lots of remote area. So I live in a very remote area. My town has 3,000 or like, say, 15,000 people. And we live about 16 hours away from a nearest town. So our internet is like, oh, it's bad. So I was very, very happy. And I'm on the board for our local ISP.
Oh, good.
So we were very, very, very happy to hear that, you know, money will start being given to us to be able to upgrade our infrastructure. And they're like, when we said remote, we didn't mean that remote. We were like, what?
We went, you know, like within a couple hours of the city, not actual people living out in the boondocks.
Boondocks is nice. I passed the boondocks going to my house.
They're another 10 hours closer to the city.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Oh.
The plane, to get a plane out of here, it's like four people on the plane, including the pilot.
Oh, no.
Yeah. We shake his hand on the way in. It's fine.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to struggle and have to get that far away from civilization, you might as well know who you're going to go down with if things go wrong.
Well, that's exactly right.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. It was basically a plan, because 90% of Canada lives like in a very, very urban places, but like 10% don't.
Sure. That makes sense.
So we were all like, yay, internet.
Right.
And then they were all like, eh, maybe not. And we're like, no. But, our internets.
But internet, that's how I live. That's how I know the rest of the world exists.
Oh, pretty much.
Don't take it away from me. I need that.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it. I think I have an ISP meeting coming up like next week. I think we're all just going to cry in a corner for a while.
Let's talk about how do you get this ISP? How do you get this thing to your house to begin with? Like, go to? How do you make this happen?
Well, the internet is a series of tubes, so you need to get a tube to your house. So,
for those of you who don't know, that is actually mocking one of our senators from the United States. But anyway, continue.
I'm surprised you got that, actually. Most people just laugh at it. But
oh, no.
Yeah.
That was quite the to-do around my office when he said that. So.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
So, yes, you... Generally, let's say I move to a new town and I go, hey, my house needs to have internet. You will call your local ISP. And sometimes you have multiple ISPs. So you will call whichever one is best suited for you. In my current town, we have two ISPs. We have the one I am a chairman of, and we have one that is a major company.
Oh, a major company.
Yeah. A major company.
That's
because we have a local ISP, which is just like homegrown. We built it ourselves. And we have one that's like one of the big three came to our town and was like, we're going to give you guys internet too.
Oh, and you were like, okay, cool. Give me internet, please.
Yes, exactly. That's what we were saying. The problem is that they did not do what they said they were going to do. Therefore, I'm still part of the board of a smaller one.
Oh,
that
bites.
Nonetheless, so you will go to your ISP and you will go, hey, can I have some internets? And they go, yes, we will happily give you internets. And then they give you usually a small box. And depending on where you live, you go home and you plug your box into the wall, usually via a coax cable or through a fiber connection or an Ethernet cable, depending on what kind of internet you get.
Sure.
And then your fiber box will talk to your internet box, I should say, which is called a modem, will talk to the ISP and go, hey, I'm here. You set me up, and these people bought me, and then they will give you internets.
I like the incredibly simplistic answer to that. That's great.
I can give you more depth if you really want. But
so in the United States, there's basically three ways, four ways maybe, that you can get internet. One would be that you have your satellite providers, which are questionable at best. And they're very good if you're in a very, very remote location and you just need something, like you're going to send an email to grandma. But normally the speeds are pretty slow and they're not particularly reliable because it's satellite. So, you know, rainstorm comes, you're out of the question for a bit. And then there's DSL, which is through your cable person. So it comes through like a coax cable and into your house, and they will give you the cable modem and connect you to whatever else you need. And then there's the phone line version, which is what I personally have. And they deliver it to you over the whatever they had previously for phone line. However, around my area, they upgraded that. So it's actually pretty decent. Like, they just did the upgrade last year, I think. So I think I get 50 megabits per second, which is why I am so able to do this on a regular basis.
That would be ADSL.
ADSL. There we go. Thank you. And then
broadband
internet. So it's like something completely divorced from cable or anything else that you might have coming to your house. And it's usually through like one of the other companies, but it's much, much, much faster usually.
Yes.
And
much, much faster.
We're talking like if you get fiber, that's a very fast broadband internet. And everybody who does things on the internet really wants broadband because it's, or fiber because it's significantly faster and amazing.
People just want broadband in general. It's way better than ADSL and DSL.
Yes.
Coming from someone who has DSL.
Anyway, those are the four basic kinds, and it completely depends upon what's available to you in your area and how much you're willing to spend on it. Because a lot of times, you know, you can get the broadband, but it's significantly more expensive than most people are willing to pay. Now that we live our lives online, it makes more sense.
Technically, I guess you could get fiber anywhere in the world if you're willing to pay for it.
You have millions of dollars to make them
run a cable to your house.
Yeah, I mean, the closest one is probably, I don't know, 16 hours away from you.
Yeah.
It'd probably be a good $1 billion to run you fiber.
Yeah, probably pretty close. It was $350,000 to run it from the ISP to my house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did quote them on it. I want to know.
Well, I mean, it's good to know what you got to save for, you know, get those priorities going. Do you want to travel the world and, you know, save for retirement, or do you want internet to your house?
Do you want a house or do you want internet?
No, just run my fiber out to the middle of a field. That'd be great.
Yeah, exactly.
Sit there with my computer.
There's a plot of land there. It's a little tent and a computer in it. Just plug me in, would you?
It's all I can afford after you run me the fiber.
Pretty much.
So once you have that to your house, what do you need next?
Ooh, that's a very tough question. Technically, to be perfectly frank, you don't need anything else. You could just plug your computer in and be ready to go.
Oh.
But that would be very bad, because that means that your computer is directly plugged into the internet with no filter.
Ooh. Okay. Yes. And that's not a good thing?
That's a very bad thing. That means everybody on the internet can technically see your computer. And the more people that can see your computer, the more people that want to be on your computer and in your computer, because there's very bad people out there.
So I get my little modem from my provider, and then what do I need to do from there? Like, they tell me not to change anything on it for Windstream.
Yep. And that's fair. For most ISPs, you won't have to change anything. They'll come preloaded, or they'll get their configuration directly from the ISP itself. It'll come down the line. But for the average person, you should go out and you should buy yourself a router. A router plugs directly into the modem, so it is on your side, you own it. If you just use the modem, then everything that you do goes directly to the ISP, and like, there's no barrier between you two.
Mm-hmm.
So what you would want to do then is to buy a router. So your router would plug into your modem, and then your router would feed your house. That's what you want. That would be the ideal situation for most people.
Okay.
Now, some ISPs do offer routers inside of their modems, but that's up to you if you want to go there, or if you're just not worried about it, or you're just setting it up for grandma.
Oh, but I get to do that for Christmas. But anyway, continue.
But let's say you don't want to set it up for grandma and you want to set it up for yourself instead. So I'm going to go out and buy myself a router. And routers are different than switches, which are different than modems. There's many different levels. So you are looking for a router. And generally you can find them at any tech place. You can buy one at Walmart. Canadian Tire sells them.
What?
You guys don't have Canadian Tire, I guess. Never thought about that. This is a United States thing.
Canadian Tire. Is that like a tire store that also sells internet equipment? Yeah.
It's like Walmart, basically. It's a Canadian version of like Walmart, but they also do like car repairs.
Okay, so it's like Nebraska Furniture Mart, which you would think is just furniture, but they have like everything.
Yeah, exactly. Same basic principle.
Awesome. Okay, Canadian Tire. I learned something fun.
So you would go and buy yourself a router, and that's personally, and then you would plug your computer into said router, and the router will instantly take, well, it's instantly, I shouldn't say, but it's generally generally set up right out of the box that it will just, it'll take an IP address from the ISP, which is your internet address, and then it will turn it into a home address so that you get transported into the router and then through the internet, rather than the internet directly connected to your computer.
So this IP address that the world can see, my home address, that is going to, that protects me by giving me a second layer. So what keeps people from being able to get into that and be able to see like the rest of the IP addresses from my house?
Technically, that would be a firewall, which is usually built into your router. And it's also considered, it's called network address tracing or network address translation. So NAT. And so your NAT would basically go, hey, your inside network is going to be 1.1.1.1, which is a 4-digit number, or a 4-octave number. And then it will turn, the router will go, okay, well, 1.1.1.1 is obviously not your internet address, because that would be silly. And then it will turn it into something more usable for the actual general world to use, like 172.something.something.something. Okay. And then you get to point to other people's addresses, like Google's, which is 8.8.8.8.
Okay. And that's how we find each other out on the internet, is by these little addresses. So it's kind of like giving them my street address, but not being like, and in the third bedroom to the right, you'll find my jewelry.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Or like more like your phone number. Like, this is my phone number. This is how you get a hold of me. But this is not my credit card number.
Fair. Okay, so the router usually has some kind of protection built into it. A firewall, you said? What's a firewall?
A firewall is a wall made of fire. It's very accurate in its naming schemes.
I haven't noticed my router being on fire recently.
It's a very small fire.
Maybe mine's broken.
Is your fire gone out? That's very bad. A firewall is a protection device that's built into most routers and or other security devices, which controls the flow of information. So it'll make sure that certain information can both not get out of your network and both some information cannot get back into your network. It's, for most people, it's automatically configured on your net, on your router itself. So that way the router kind of takes care of what's going in and out. You can configure it on the router to make sure that, say, you don't want, when you go to copy a file from your friend's computer to yours over the network, you don't want the internet to also be able to copy that file from your friend's computer to the network, to the internet.
Oh, sure. So it
makes sense.
It controls things within the house, like can go talk to each other, but they can't necessarily take that information and send it outside of the house.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
So that the firewall is built in, but I also have a firewall on my computer. I mean, Windows tells me all the time that I need to turn it on.
Absolutely. Windows firewall is also something that's, it's good. It's another layer of protection. It'd be like having a security system outside of your house, but you also have locks on your doors. So you want to make sure that anything on your computer does not get into, get out to the internet. Say the firewall, let's say you download an email and the email has a scary virus on it. You're allowing the virus through the firewall because you downloaded it.
Sure.
And now your computer's firewall is going to stop it from going back out because it's going to go, hey, this is trying to do something that I don't think it should be doing.
Gotcha. So that's just more localized specifically to pieces on your computer. And the physical one will help you more with the external communication.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
It technically, firewalls block protocols, so ports, but that's more of a, that's a bit more than most people know or need to know about it, really.
Right. And you can block, like, I can let my Google Chrome through, but it's going to block this other unknown thing that's trying to use a weird port that it should not be open anyway.
Sure, exactly.
The way it was explained to me It's like having a little pegboard in front of you. And like, if you put something in one of those holes, nothing can get through it. But if you take that away, then something can get through. And whether or not you want something to actually go through that is a whole different question. But it's best to keep as many of those holes blocked as you don't need. So you don't have,
absolutely.
So you don't have people going through port 4,450 because you didn't bother to block it, but it doesn't do anything other than this one software that this company uses, you know, like, so anyway, that's the basic idea of a port.
More or less. Yeah. It's a protocol that just points at one thing specifically. Normally, like, email uses 25, or internet, or like web pages use 80 or 443 or many other ones.
So why is it when my internet is not functioning properly, they tell me to unplug my router and plug it back in again?
Sometimes the router, so that's, oh, there's so many different levels of this one. There's generally a router picks up its IP address from the modem. So they may not be asking you to reboot your router. They may be asking you to reboot your modem. If the modem, let's say, loses communication with the ISP, it'll forget who it is and what it's doing. It kind of, it got lost and it doesn't know what it's doing anymore. So you kind of need to turn it off and turn it back on. So it's like, oh, hey, right, that's what I was doing. Now I remember.
But, gotcha.
On the other side, it's routers are, routers can be a whole other bag of worms. So a router can forget what it's doing too, the same way a modem can. It can go, hey, who am I? What am I doing? And sometimes it just locks up and you'll reboot it and it turns back on and everyone's happy again.
Gotcha.
But there's also times when, like, say DNS caching. So your DNS would be, let's say, I know that Google's 8.8.8.8, but I don't want to look it up every time.
Sure.
So my router is going to go, oh, I know what that is. So that way you don't have to go to the internet every time you want to know what Google is. So sometimes that gets corrupted because it's a computer, and anything else, it can be corrupted.
Sure.
So let's say it forgets that Google is 8.8.8.8 and it thinks that Google is 1.1.1.1. You can no longer get to Google. So
to you, on your computer, it looks like nothing is functioning when it's just that your DNS is trying to point to the wrong thing.
Sure. Yeah. Happens all the time.
Okay. Cool. So that's the basic of, like, actually being connected. But most of my devices are on Wi-Fi. Ugh. What do I need to do to make my modem and my router all go to Wi-Fi?
Well, you can get, again, you can get routers that have Wi-Fi built in. You can get modems that have Wi-Fi built in. And you can get external access points, is what they're called, which is basically a device that you plug into your network that will then just broadcast wireless networks.
Okay.
And then you will, your phone will search for said signals. So it will look on a 2.4 band or a 5.0 band and go, I see these things. Which one do you want me to talk to?
And so then those kind of passwordy things, like, I know that people sometimes name their things funny, like FBI security van number 4 or whatever.
Yes.
So is it a good idea to rename them, or?
It's actually not. It doesn't matter. It's one of those things. It's like customization. It's like the color of your car. Technically, it doesn't actually affect anything.
Gotcha.
But it's good for you to know which one's which.
Well,
so for someone like me who has 4 different Wi-Fi set up, it's good for me to differentiate. Yeah, I know. I'm a huge nerd. I'm aware. Yeah. It's good for me to differentiate which network is which. So I have different Wi-Fis going to different places and stuff like that. Let's say for grandma, maybe it's good to call it, you know, grandma's Wi-Fi. So that way when she has the nice man from the internet come by, he will plug her into the right network.
Oh no, that yes. Sounds really ominous.
Well, yes, it does, but it's sad how accurate that is. I'm using grandma's Wi-Fi as an actual thing because it happened to me. So
yes, fair. That's a thing that should happen. So it's just another appliance that you plug in, and to set all this up, you usually plug it into whatever device you're trying to set up. Do you have to like have a Ethernet cord or?
It depends. You can, like, devices like iPhones can pick up a Wi-Fi with obviously without having to be plugged in. Say another access point. So you want to actually plug another Wi-Fi device into your Wi-Fi. You're going to need to have that plugged in. A computer that doesn't have Wi-Fi needs to be plugged in. Say a desktop computer.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. If I do get a Wi-Fi thing separate from my router and I want to set it up so that it does have grandma's Wi-Fi or whatever on it, is there usually like instructions with the box or do I have to like go look all the stuff up? What's the best way to figure that out?
It depends on the device you get. I prefer Ubiquiti. And they come with very, very pretty little white instructions that tells you exactly what to set up for the, like, in the most detailed way you can imagine. They'll tell you exactly what to do with your computer. They'll be like, okay, so plug me in for 15 seconds, wait for my flashing blue light to go flashing green. Then go on your computer and go to this website. And then you go to this website and it goes, hi, I'm your new blank, let's say access point. And then it will go, okay, let's set up your first Wi-Fi or your first wireless network. So you'll go, I want grandma's Wi-Fi. And it'll be like, okay, choose a password. And then you'll go, I want my password to be grandma's Wi-Fi 123.
Gotcha. So it kind of depends on the brand. So you say Ubiquiti is your brand of choice.
My go-to. It is.
But I've seen things like Netgear and Linksys and D-Link.
Sure. Like, yeah, there's tons.
What are like some of the most reliable brands, or does it depend upon like which version of the thing you're getting?
It's not so much version, it depends on your need. There's lots. I personally use Cisco, I use Ubiquiti, I use Netgear. Those are my brands of choice. I have Linksys in my house, but it's not my favorite, but that's not due to the reliability of it, that's due to the configuration.
Gotcha.
Let's say I was going to go buy one for my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I would buy her a Ubiquiti one because I know Ubiquiti will, I'll hook it up, I'll set it up, and I will never have to touch it again because I know it'll just keep going. I've had issues with some of the cheaper brands. If you go for knockoff brands or even brands like D-Link, sometimes you can get some pretty hit and miss.
Sure.
And then you have to look at other things too. Let's say you have a brand new computer that has a blazing fast AC wireless. So you're going to want to go for a router that has an AC wireless line, or else it won't be
blazing fast.
You'll have to connect on a slower one like BGN, etc.
Gotcha. When it comes to all this networking stuff, it sounds like there's a lot of little pieces that can break down.
Oh yes.
So how do you figure out what's broken?
Lots of different ways. Logs are a big one. Everything has a log. You just need to know where to look for it. So every network device you have has a log on it somewhere. ISPs actually are able to check the logs of your modems and stuff like that remotely, which is very nice.
So basically call whomever if you're having internet trouble and you can't figure it out and unplugging the router didn't fix it.
Yeah. Let's say the internet's broken and you call them and they go, oh, it's on your side. Well, then they know that their modem is working fine. It must be something that's past the modem that they can't see.
Uh-huh.
But if you call them and they go, oh, hey, yeah, you're right, it is something on our side, it looks like your DB values have dropped below a certain threshold, then they will send out Mr. Internet Man and he will come to your house and he will fix your internet by probably changing a cable or resynchronizing your lines.
Gotcha. So just making sure that they're talking correctly to whatever it needs to be talking to?
Sure, absolutely. I know for myself where I'm using, I have a coax cable that comes into my house from a line way back in the behind my house. There's things called DBMVs, which is like decibel drops or decibel values. So let's say it's an audio frequency. So let's say the audio frequency is sitting at a negative 20 normally, and then all of a sudden it drops to negative 60. Ooh. And then goes back up to 20, and you're like, that doesn't look good, right? Like that seems bad,
right?
So then they would look at your router, your modem, and go, oh, hey, that's weird. It's getting a big drop. And you go, yeah, it's on your side, not mine. And sometimes anything can happen. That could include, say, let's say you live in the Arctic and it's minus 60 out, and the pole behind your house decides to freeze and crack, and it pulls down a line, and then all of a sudden you have no internet for 3 days.
That sounds like personal experience there.
Yeah, that was a little poignant. That happened.
Oh, that would suck so hard. I'm sorry.
It's okay. It happens. But yeah, your first step should be your own stuff. So reboot your own device, let's say your iPhone, then reboot your router.
Sure.
Then reboot your modem. And then if that doesn't work, you're calling your ISP because you're like, listen, something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I tried this, this, and this.
And they'll have you try this, this, and this anyway because they don't trust you and they shouldn't.
Well, sure. They shouldn't, absolutely. Maybe you did it wrong. I talked to many users that say, oh, I rebooted my computer earlier. And I was like, well, I don't think you did. And they're like, no, I did. And I'm like, well, can you show me? And they'll just turn their monitor off and turn it back on.
Oh, my gosh!
And I'm like, see, about that, that's not your computer. So.
I feel the pain so hard. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. It's part of the job. It's whatever. But it makes you want to recheck everything, which is fine.
Well, and sometimes I do know that devices, when you reboot them, it doesn't necessarily do what it needs to do. And so sometimes you have to shut off completely and turn back on.
Absolutely.
And that it's a different kind of, especially with Windows, a different kind of shutdown. So.
Oh, whole different thing. It's the same as putting your car on idle versus putting your car, like turning the keys off on your car, right?
Exactly.
Sometimes restarting your computer just puts everything into like a memory cache and then it'll just reboot it. And then when it comes back up, it just boots it all back up again. So like it didn't turn anything off. It just kind of put it to sleep for a second and then brought it back up.
Mm-hmm. Which is...
And literally, if you can think of networks, it's the same as a computer. A networking device is the same as a computer. It has the same... It has processing units. It has ports. It has everything the same that your computer would. So if you reboot your... Let's say you turn your switch off too fast or you turn on and turn off your modem too fast. Your modem holds a certain amount of charge, so maybe it'll hold onto a few things just to try and make it boot up faster. So it will keep all that storage, all the bad code that was in there before, and then it'll just plug it right back in. You're like, well, that didn't do anything, so.
So yeah, there's a reason when they say to turn it or to unplug it. The general rule of thumb is a full minute, which you don't necessarily have to do the full minute every time. But if you do it for a short time and it doesn't work, you can always try it slightly longer and then see if that makes any difference before having to be on the dreaded phone with the ISP for a while.
Do people actually wait a full minute?
Well, ever? I mean, you tell them a minute and they assume that 20 seconds is actually a minute and go from there.
I'm part of the people who have to fix this. I don't even do it for a minute. I do like 15 seconds tops because I am impatient.
And that's our problem. But anyway, so those
I'd
are
like
the...
to talk about one more thing.
Huh.
If you don't, I don't know if you were going to end it or not. But...
No, I was going to say there are other things that you can add. Like I have, it's not really a big house, but there's lots of walls. And sometimes I don't get a very good signal in my upstairs bedroom from my downstairs Wi-Fi. So I personally use something called a power line adapter. Do you want to explain what that is?
Those are very cool and they're... I want to say new, but they've been around for, say, the last 10 years, but they've only become, like, really, like, viable in the last few. So it basically, it reads the power line in your house, and it puts a certain signal on it the same way you would through, like, an Ethernet cable. And then you can just plug something else somewhere else in the house, and it will pick up the same line, the same signal that that one is putting out to allow it to transfer data further. So you could plug an Ethernet cable into one side of a power line adapter, and plug in another one upstairs into another Ethernet cable, and you would still be able to keep the same signal. I know how it works, but it's always magic. it converts your network signal into variable decibels and puts it into the power lines. It's actually a very, very new system, and it's very cool. The speeds are not perfect, because obviously you still have to put overhead for actual power, and power corrupts data or signals, so you can actually get data loss. So normally you won't get anything over like 100 to a gigabit, unless you're going for very, very high end. But they're actually very interesting, and they're very, very new, and I hope they actually move further in the future.
So this is preferably you have a single home. Because if you're in like an apartment building or a dorm room or something, it's going to send it to the entire power system in the building. So
yes,
somebody else in the building could theoretically plug in another one and just like be like, oh, this is mine now. So, and it's going to be very diluted and very hard to get to. But if you live in a single family dwelling, they are very, very nice and they help me to do what I do here. But anyway, so that one is really super duper handy. But are there other ways to make your Wi-Fi better? Because I know that's the huge number one. Like, what are some tips to make your Wi-Fi decent?
Better? Get a third party. The one that comes with your modem generally isn't too great. The one that comes with your router, better, but still you're getting on the line of it's a router, it does multiple things. So it's doing multiple objects at the same time.
Sure.
It's jack of all trades, master of none. So if you really, really want the best Wi-Fi you can get, you want to get something that is a master of one instead of jack of all trades.
Sure.
That's where you'd get into the access points. That's where you'd get into a third-party device that would just be straight up only there just to display, just a shootout internet waves.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So the number one thing is to get a third-party. And then some of the other very basic tips. Don't hide it. Don't put it in a drawer or in a cabinet. Put it.
People do that.
Yeah. I have friends who have to like beg their parents to actually put the Wi-Fi thing not in a cabinet.
Oh my God.
Because when they go to their third floor bedroom, they don't have internet.
Sorry, I've never heard of. I've never seen that before.
Because it looks ugly. It's just this black thing sitting up there. I want to put it away so it doesn't look gross.
Just put it on top of a cabinet or something. That's what most people do, I think, in my town at least.
Yeah. Well, that's preferable. But so yeah, don't put it inside of thing, and don't put it have a brick wall between you and whatever you're trying to get to, because that will block a lot of the signal.
Don't put it near ovens or microwaves.
Yes. Those also will interfere with the signal.
Yes. You can also get things like repeaters, which will...
Yes. I had a repeater. We had a fun setup at one of my husband's pastor, and we were using the church's Wi-Fi because the way they were set up, they had a Wi-Fi thing sitting in the window of the church. We had a brick house, and I had a repeater sitting on the windowsill closest to the church, and that was how we got our Wi-Fi. And it got to like a bedroom and slightly into the house, and that's all the Wi-Fi we got.
Oh my.
It was interesting. But
I want to make a note of one thing too. Access points and Wi-Fi repeaters are very different things. While an access point is directly plugged into your network and will send out internet signals, a Wi-Fi repeater will just take in the signals that it's getting from a different Wi-Fi and then just repeat them out. So if there's any possibility of degradation, so let's say it's going a long distance, like across a road or...
out a window and into another building. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You'll get degradation, which means that it can only send out a signal that's just as strong as the one it's receiving.
Yeah, that was not a good internet time in our household.
I have two more things to mention, though.
Okay, go ahead.
First things first is there's a difference between a hub and a switch. A switch is smart. It will take in one line and send it out to the proper line. A hub will take in one bit of information and send it to everywhere. So if you want to expand a network in your house to get more Ethernet line or more like directly connected devices, you're going to want to get a switch, not a hub, because hubs are bad. They should not be used anymore.
They were good back when, like...
They were never good.
Well, they were an option.
They're cheap. They're still an option. They should not be an option anymore. People who sell them should be put away. But besides the point... I have gripes with things. That's fine.
Well, I wouldn't expect a nerd to not have opinions on things, so I appreciate it.
No problem. I have one more thing, though.
Okay.
Passwords. Everything should have a password. Your router that you buy from the store comes with a password.
Admin is not a password.
The router that comes built into your modem from the internet people has a password. Change it. The more passwords you can put on things, the better. I got into networking when I was 13 because I wanted Wi-Fi when I was at my grandma's house, and my neighbor had her neighbor had Wi-Fi, so I had a Palm Pilot at the time. and I hacked my neighbor's Wi-Fi with a Palm Pilot and changed their password.
Oh,
so
no.
So that only I could use it. I did that with a Palm Pilot.
That's skill. So, I'm impressed.
Yeah, it was interesting. But so, and they're mostly because their password was just password. And it's not like I'm doing any crazy hacking skills. It was mostly I just jumped on it, changed their password, and just used their internet for the entire time I was there. And then they had to call the big bad internet people to come by and figure out what was wrong with their internets.
Well, I hope that internet people had a way to reset the password.
Yeah, most devices, even if you forget your password, most devices have a reset switch on them. Usually they're very, very small, about the size of a tip of a pencil. So you shove your pencil in there, wait 30 seconds, and then it'll flash and tell you and then reboot itself, and then you'll be good.
And then it goes back to the settings that were previously on it.
Or came default with it,
yeah.
Which you can usually find on the underside of your device.
/ on the internet.
Or on the internet. Exactly. Default passwords are bad.
Very bad.
Because you can Google Linksys default password, and you can find every single password they will ever use. So change them. I thought of another thing.
Okay.
Sorry. Wi-Fi, it's good, and everybody should be having it, obviously. But make sure you're using proper Wi-Fi. Don't use encryption of WEP.
Hmm.
Because there's two different ones. There's like multiple, but big ones. There's three. There's WEP.
Okay.
Which is Wireless Encryption Protocol.
Okay.
There's WPA, Wireless Protection something. And WPA2. You should be using WAP2 or WPA2 because it is much better than WPA, first off, for encryption. And for two, you can't hack it easily. WEP can technically be broken with an iPhone. WPA1, take a full computer, but you can pretty much do it within 10, 15 minutes. And WPA2 would take a supercomputer like 87 years.
Impressive.
Yes.
So that's just...
That's just a default setting that you can change on your router.
Okay. And that just...
Usually it's a drop-down box.
And that's just how it sends the information out. What kind of code that it uses as it's sending it, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's the encryption protocol it uses between the device and your mobile device. So let's say your phone will pick up WPA2 or WPA or EWP that the router is sending out.
Do you have anything else to add? Are we good?
We could talk forever about this, but no, I'm good. That's fine.
So anyway, you can reach Service Desk by searching Service Desk Podcast. We're on the Twitters. We've got a Facebook. We've got a website. If you just search for us, you will find us. And if you would like to submit a ticket or have a specific question that you would like us to answer, you can go to servicedeskpodcast@gmail.com. We ask that you rate and review the podcast. That helps us to get more traction on iTunes especially. But if you have Stitcher or Podcatcher is really fun. You can go look up all kinds of podcasts there and leave them reviews and let them know how awesome they are. I'm Kim.
And I'm still not Andrew.
And we are your techie friends.